going to happen here today. We will call to order an informational meeting only of the Joint Committee on Ways and Means. Thank you for your interest and for being here. Just a brief overview of how we would propose to have this conversation. Senator Schrader and I would like for it to be a conversation and somewhat more informal than an official hearing or work session of the committee. We will briefly go over sort of a framework of how we approach this, talking briefly about a reminder of the budget that has already been enacted by the good work of this committee, some sense of the current economic environment, although we will all learn a lot more about that on Friday, a brief review of the principles that guided our recommendations here, and then some specifics. We would like to go over the narrative part of that first, and then after that we will pass out the details so the people in the audience will have it, so that there isn't a feeding frenzy on that one. The staff will just pass out copies. Please don't tackle them to get them. And then after we've done that, we would first open for questions among committee members. And then we really would like to have a more informal conversation about it. We would entertain questions from other members of the legislature, members of the press, and then we can have time later for questions or clarifications from the audience. Not an opportunity to debate, but an opportunity to understand. So thanks for that, Mr. Co-Chair.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. Not sure why everyone's here. The document's only three bloody pages, for gosh sake, so it's pretty simple. I direct members' attention to the memo first that you all got. We finalized it today. I apologize for relatively short notice. A lot of it is the discussions we've had as Ways and Means Committee, frankly, back in October, December, and January. The parameters are pretty much as we've talked about all along. We had a pretty robust budget this last time. As you know, Oregon was hit harder than any other state with a recession. Everyone talks about the 2001-03 recession. Well, for the state of Oregon, that recession lasted until 2007. It was only this past session where we were able to get service levels even remotely close, or actually close, to what they were back in 2001. So I think that's important for people to remember. Having said that, that was a 20% increase over the previous biennium, which I think people need to remember also. And the biggest concern that the co-chairs have is the current national economic climate. I mean, we're very, very cognizant of that. Most of you have served during that horrible recession. None of us want to have to make almost $2 billion worth of cuts in the next two years, or next year, frankly, as we go into the next session. So we're very, very concerned about that. And you'll see that in the way the information is presented. We have two basic presentations, if you will. One is what we consider the more likely situation. That's if the forecast goes down, which means a de minimis amount of additions to the budget other than what we've chatted about in the public eye these last 3-4 months. If, on the other hand, the Almighty decides not to strike us down along with the rest of the nation and we're percolating along at what we've seen in the two previous forecasts since we've left Dodge, then there's opportunity for a number of different programs. As co-chairs, we've been fairly parsimonious. That's unlike us. Usually we're pretty generous people. But this time we're adopting a little more conservative attitude towards budget. Having said that, and of course, if the budget tanks, and tanks means in this biennium we're down $100 million in this forecast, then we got to do some real serious work, folks. Our hearing schedule will be totally changed around. We just have to be ready for that. We're not assuming it's going to be that bad at this stage of the game. We're hoping this is not quite the same climate we had before. I guess I direct people to the members anyway, to a document on fiscal environment. This is just kind of laying out, and I'll read it for the benefit of the people out there, the things that we're concerned about. We've had conversations with our revenue folks. This is not just from LFO. This is working with the revenue and fiscal people, and you know, we don't know what the forecast is, and we'll know that on Friday. But we are concerned about the national economy slowing very, very dramatically. We're really concerned about the state economy. It's slowing, but pretty much on track from, I think, what they originally expected. Income tax projections are holding at least through December. Unfortunately, we won't know that total thing for a year from now, so we're kind of guessing ahead a little bit. Lottery, for the first time in a long time, is tracking below forecast. It's not a big player, if you will, in our general fund lottery fund budget, but it is, I think, very, very kind that for the first time since lottery's inception, virtually, that we're starting to see that tail off. Everyone feels a recession is much more likely, at least a 50-50 proposition at this stage of the game. Well, that was not the case when we left Salem 4 months ago. The revenue impact is of what we're seeing on February, that's the co-chair's opinion, I think the revenue chair's opinion, and the certified smart people's opinion, that's the tip of the iceberg. If it's down in the February forecast, we're assuming, for sake of budgeting, it's going to be down more in June. That's the mindset. We talked about this before, but that's the mindset we have, and we're linked up, at least it seems, with our revenue folks on that. We're hoping that we don't have a 20% decline, as we saw back in 2001, 2003. But I remind members that for every 1% decline in the general fund, that's $130 million. So it doesn't take much of a blip on the radar screen. I served here when $130 million was like cutting your arm off in the state of Oregon to find the reductions to make the budget needs there was very difficult. Having said that, we do have a pretty good rainy day fund, thank goodness, and the education stability fund, a decent ending balance. And hopefully, as long as the decline is below that figure, there's a chance we can manage that with minimal reductions in budgets and using some of the reserve money that we have. Our current ending balance is in the $200 million range, and for the general fund and lottery fund, about 36. And, of course, we've got to have an eye in this committee here today, and we hope our revenue folks do, too, that whatever bills we pass will have significant roll-up in 09-11. And, of course, we aren't going to have much of an ending balance at that point because it will have gone into the rainy day fund, so our startup monies will be significantly depleted. So hopefully, as we do things here in the next 3 weeks, we're going to be thinking about not just this session, but frankly, how it impacts our 09-11 priorities as we look down the line. With that, I'll turn it over to my co-chair.
In that context...
Madam Coach. Yes. There are some seats up here, I think, that if people want to sit down...
Particularly, we wanted the press and other legislators to be able to sit there. If anyone's interested, feel free. Thanks. When we looked at making recommendations to our colleagues on the committee for the general fund and lottery fund, we basically identified four priorities that are very consistent with the memo that we sent out to you and to other members in December. And I'll just go over them briefly. They are, first, to preserve basic services during times of economic downturn. The biggest commitment we have in fulfilling that priority will be the rainy day fund and providing the committed 1% to that the statute that we passed through in the regular session would provide. Given what Senator Schrader said, we think that would be a wise and important thing for us to do. So you will see that we preserve that $139 million transfer to the rainy day fund in our recommendations to you. The second would be one-time investments that eliminate or dramatically reduce otherwise imminent and significant state obligations. So if there is a one-time investment we can make that helps us avoid not a possible obligation, but something we will actually have to pay. And we'll talk about some examples of that. The third priority we would have is one-time investments of statewide significance that meet a need or exploit an opportunity that will not exist in 2009. Very consistent with what we communicated to you and other members in December. And finally, a priority for expanded or reformulated services that mitigate long-term costs. Those are the priorities or principles that the two co-chairs used as we made our recommendations. With that, I think it will be more helpful now if people can actually see the numbers, what you've been waiting for. As Senator Schrader said, we decided it would be most helpful to committee members if we gave you kind of a bracket of what we think might be likely scenarios. The first scenario is if the forecast on Friday does show some decline. Not dramatic decline, we haven't even tackled that one yet. But we would define that as if the general and lottery funds combined show a decline of between $25 and $125 million from the December forecast. And then the second scenario is, what if the general and lottery fund forecast is essentially unchanged from December? And by essentially unchanged, we would define that as plus or minus $25 million from December. So Senator Schrader will describe what we would recommend in the case of scenario one, and then I'll talk about scenario two.
And I would not take a lot from the order of the different scenarios other than scenario one, I will tell you, is not our preferred scenario. But it is the co-chair's unfortunate feeling that this is the most likely scenario. And that's why you see it listed as scenario one. And one thing I didn't say, and I think everyone needs to be aware, we're counting on our revenue committee folks to help us out. Because our business energy tax credit is taken off by leaps and bounds and is costing us upwards of $13 million more than I think anticipated. Our federal government's somewhat paradoxical so-called help stimulus package is also going to cost us about, $50 to $80 million unless we can do some fancy footwork in our revenue committees. And so that's irrespective of what you see on the sheets. Those are two big holes that we have not even talked about filling right here. Okay, so assuming the forecast is down $25 to $125 million, there are still some things we're going to need to do, as we talked about, some adjustments that I don't think can avoid. First and foremost, of course, as you know, that we do have that commitment to our rainy day fund that was made in the legislation passed back in our 2007 session. $139 million plus goes into that automatically coming into this biennium. The first two pieces we're calling out that we're going to do, regardless of the forecast, basically, even though we don't have a lot of money, is dealing with some of our senior and children's issues. We're going to use the rebalance money that's been identified by the department right now. That money may or may not be all of that there in June. There's going to be another forecast come out. The Ways and Means Committee, as you remember, did a lot of special purpose appropriations so we could put money aside. And I think the message is the money that we gave to DHS is going to stay in DHS and be used for DHS-type purposes. As far as new money being available because caseloads are down or costs are down or whatever, we are showing here that we're in agreement to do at least $6 million in terms of, I think at this point we're talking mostly thinking of the assisted living facilities and foster home, but we'll leave that up to the committee and others for some discussion. In the children's area, as you know, we put money aside in the budget for improving our child welfare services, which is fairly timely given the headline in the paper today, and we all knew this was coming. It's nothing new. If the forecast is better, we hope to do more. If the forecast isn't better, we're going to rely on the 100 new caseworkers we got during 2007 plus some additional monies that have been identified in the rebalance and we have talked about. Troopers, this is rolling troopers out at the last minute for 24/7. We make no bones about that. We're committed, I think, to trying to make sure we have total coverage in 09-11. The way the recruitment's going, we had a good report from the superintendent of state police last time. They're, I wouldn't say struggling, but they're working very hard to even get the 100 new troopers on the road that we gave them in 2007. That's almost a 25% increase in patrol. And in all fairness, I think they're doing everything. And we told the superintendent, don't worry. The money's going to be there for that regardless. Just make sure you get the right people, the qualified people. But we do want to put on record that we're committed to, you know, doing the 24-7 with the state police. This rolls them out, obviously, at the very end of the biennium. If there's more money, we can do it sooner. Big look. Lots of discussion on that as we've gone over in our committee. People love it. People hate it. People think it should have done this. Some people think it should never have been started. And there's lots of other iterations in between. But I think we do need to continue that work. I think none of us feel that Measure 49 solved the state's problems. If we put in a reduced amount, that probably means you're going to have to do some more big look stuff in 09-11. So read that as 350 for now, probably more in 09-11 to actually get the work product done. Measure 49, that's two lines there you see with DLCD and DAS. Basically, it's one budget item. This is the slightly slower rollout. It's not the accelerated rollout. Still gets through the express lane, but the conditional takes a little longer to do, as you guys remember. And we'll be discussing this in our committee hearings in the next 3 weeks. But it's an attempt to save some money, so we just don't feel if the forecast tanks so badly, we can do things quite as quickly as we would have liked. The OMSI debt restructure is pretty self-evident. We talked about that. That's been a hard, long-fought, congenial battle over how the best way to deal with that is, and I think that's pretty set in stone regardless of what happens. It only costs us more money if we don't move ahead. The co-chairs are wanting to entertain the discussion about some S&S reductions. There's different ways you can actually do that. That's that $30 million you see. One lesson we learned from the recession was the longer you put off making these decisions, the more impossible it becomes for the agencies to do. And as you recollect, when we walked in the door in 2003, we were still looking at a $400-$450 million shortfall that was only identified 3 months before, and there's no way to cut programs or do S&S reductions. So we ended up bonding our tobacco settlement, which was pretty unfortunate and I think pretty pathetic. So the co-chairs have learned from past experience that we want to, if we're going to make some adjustments, we can make them earlier in the biennium. Then there's a couple other funds and federal funds. That's it for the general fund lottery expenditures if things are bad. We are still going to go ahead with some mortgage lending enforcement. That's been called out as a priority, I think, by every caucus and pretty much everyone around the state. We are committed to going ahead with some of the work in ODOT, trying to identify, interoperability types of services, making sure that our communication system's up and running. That's going to be a topic of discussion amongst us. We have a work group that I think is meeting. When is that, Nancy?
This week
sometime. So stay posted on that. And we're going to do some wetland mitigation. That's already been taken care of. I believe we called that out in one of our previous ways and means hearings. And that's been an interest with the whole water issue has been a big topic of discussion here. Federal funds action, or as you remember, colleagues, this is stuff that we've already worked on in our committees where the military department with the $17.5 million for emergency management and making sure that the disaster relief money gets to our counties and those people that have been hardest hit by the horrible storms that racked our coasts. A lot of this is going to be done with our strategy in ways and means has been to do the special purpose appropriation. What does that mean? That means that that money can only be used for the purposes we designate. So if you're a person out there that's interested in your particular program, is it going to be funded or not if it's got a special purpose appropriation? The answer is yes. Yes, unless the economy tanks or something else, but it can't be given to another program. So if we put money aside for OSP or whatever, it stays with OSP. It cannot be used to for child welfare purposes. And then when we meet again in June and we have a better sense of the overall forecast or what the needs are, how that has changed, particularly in DHS. We expect the caseloads to be all over the map. They will not look like what we saw the other day when Bruce came in and gave us the rebalance. It will not look like that in June. I guarantee it will be different just by the nature. So rather than put a lot of money into different silos and have to retake them out, we've got them in broader silos that can be accessed as needed as the June forecast comes on. I think that's it.
Okay.
Now, Coach, you want to give the good news?
The fleeting good news. Well, maybe not fleeting. We'll see. Under a static forecast, as Senator Schrader has already pointed out, and we've made a particular point of, we would still commit $139 million to the rainy day fund, fitting into our principle of providing some stability for basic services first. Under an unchanged forecast, we would have more flexibility to put not only release more of the DHS rebalance money for seniors as well as child welfare, but also to put some additional general fund into that department. We are being deliberately non-committal on the exact structure of that because we know that very good work is going on in policy committees to define what that would look like and to debate the merits of different ways of making those investments, and also because we want members of this committee to weigh in on, if that's a possibility, how would you like to structure it? Perhaps some money into DHS for preventative health services as well. Under an unchanged or static forecast, we could, as Senator Schrader pointed out, provide position authority for OSP, for troopers, a little earlier than we would otherwise do. We're not sure, given their pace of recruitment and training, that that will be necessary, but we don't want the forecast or the appropriation to be what slows them down. The superintendent of state police is committed to doing it right, to making sure that they are thoroughly vetting and screening their recruits so that they get the right people, but we don't want the funding, unless the forecast goes to hell, to be the cause for the problem, for any slowdown. Then we can talk about some other things that we wouldn't be able to do if the forecast is down. We've put some money in here, $2 million for affordable housing. We know that there are competing ideas for how we might meet that urgent need, and we deliberately didn't take a position on which of those or what combination of that would make the most sense, because committee members can debate that. Other policy committees can debate that, but that seems to be something that is both urgent and something that is of broad interest across the chambers and actually among all the caucuses, as we've heard it. Water storage, again, open for discussion, debate about exactly how that money would be invested. There are needs out there for planning for water storage, for some specific projects, and we didn't attempt to identify what that would be because, again, lots of people will want to weigh in on it. Seed money for small business loans for returning veterans who have served their country on our behalf, gone away, and their business has suffered dramatically in their absence. This would provide very small loans to get them restarted. This meets our priority for making investments that would avoid future investments or future costs that would be pretty imminent. If we can't help these people get reestablished, the cost we will bear will be much more significant and very soon. We've already talked about the state currently has an obligation for bonds that were used to build OMSI's facility, and if we don't restructure that, we are on the hook for the full $13 million with no stream of revenue to help pay for it. So this meets the second priority that we talked about. Big look, we could perhaps do a more robust program under a static forecast. And Measure 49 claims processing, we could more expeditiously process the claims that the voters approved when they approved that ballot measure. Those are timing issues more than anything. Military Department and Emergency Management, the $500,000 there would be to establish an interest-free loan fund for counties who have proposed this as a way to make sure that they can fully utilize available FEMA money. This would not be grants to those counties, but it would be a forgiveness of the interest on the loans. And we are told by the counties, or at least what I'm hearing, is that this could be very, very helpful for them. Department of Human Services is the central point of coordinating many state agencies involved in providing services to at-risk kids. An investment now in defining how we do that through what's called a wraparound program would not only improve the quality of the services, but likely reduce the time that kids spend in the state's care, which is better for them as human beings, but also more economic for us as a state and the future costs. And when I say future costs on that one, we're talking costs as early as 09-11. And finally, in the category of things that truly will not be available to us if we wait to 2009 is Oregon 150, which is an opportunity to give people a place to share their common commitment to Oregon. Once a generation, being able to say, you know, this is a community that I am proud to belong to. And as you heard in the presentation that we received here, the proposal here is to build things in 36 counties and among all the tribes that engage school kids and adults in building something that they'll remember for 25 years, because that's what makes us human. Those are our proposals.
I guess I'll finish up
comment if I may, and that's that I'm hoping for a pretty robust discussion here in the next 3 weeks. A lot of this is not news to the members sitting up here. We've talked about all these things before. But, you know, things, if for some miracle things are a lot better, we can do more. We would really like to do that. But we're just trying to be very realistic, colleagues. But we had a very good budget last session. We should be proud of that. You all did tremendous work. The advocates, a lot of people out here helped us do that, and I appreciate that. And the message here is that we're being thoughtful. Federal government doesn't seem to get it. I don't care if it's the President or Congress. They just don't know how to budget. And the state of Oregon is not going to follow in those footsteps. You know, this is a bipartisan. We're going to be as smart and as careful. We're going to save money because we don't know what's ahead of us right now. And I think that's not a bad message for Oregonians to hear from us. With that, how about questions?
Questions.
Members.
Anybody?
Come on.
Senator Whitson, and I would echo Senator Schrader's comment that I would like to encourage and create an atmosphere that provides for a robust debate and discussion about this. I don't want to have a robust debate today about every single point. I would like to make sure you have an opportunity to clarify. Senator Whitson.
Thank you. Thank you, Chair Nolan. First, I would like to compliment the co-chairs on what appears to be a very thoughtful process here in trying to determine how best to spend funds that are apparently going to be somewhat, if the federal forecast have anything to do with Oregon forecasts, they're going to be, their revenue stream is going to slow down. There's no question about that. A couple of questions. I wonder, what is about durable medical goods? That would seem to fit into the expanded or reformulated services that mitigate long-term costs. That's about, I think, the ask would be somewhere in the ballpark of $750,000, and I think that was something that we probably should have a look at. And the other is, there's no mention here of capital expenditures, and is it your intention not to address those issues, or isn't on the sheet here?
It's just not on the sheet. We have a capital construction and a bonding bill, too, and we'll be discussing all those projects from university systems, whatever.
We weren't specifically focused on requests that have an immediate demand on the general and lottery fund. but OIT, the arena, are all things that will be explicitly on our agenda to discuss as we move the bond. We will move a capital construction bill through, and we will move a bonding bill, and all the projects that we've talked about will be open for discussion during that.
Thank you.
And I will just point out, in response to the letter we sent out in December, we received, and actually LFO collected, requests that totaled about $75 million. So we had a very tough time whittling that down. And we want you to share in that opportunity. Other questions?
I just want a point of clarification. I know there's the construction package will be different, but did I hear you also say that the DME request will show up someplace else?
Not necessarily. If the forecast is good, up, and things are looking better for our state, yes. If things are not looking good, it doesn't. All sorts of requests that members and others have put in will be difficult to get through the body. As Representative Nolan said, we have $75 million worth of very, very, very good ideas.
Senator Nelson?
Yes, thank you. I guess my concern is the system of systems that we have. You know, say that we hire these state patrol people, and you see we're pushing that down until the very end of the session, but an issue that's come up in my district is that I have two prisons, and we don't have enough guards. And so the rollout, ripple effect, start arresting more people, we end up with prisons, more people in prisons. I don't have enough guards out there. And so, you know, I'm going to be forced to come to you guys and say, help me somewhere or another. And that probably goes, you know, through drug courts, goes through juvenile issues, it goes through rehabilitations, the drug courts, and all that sort of thing. So that's a concern I have, is that, you know, if we think about one thing, for whatever reason, it's going to have an effect down the line on lots of other things.
But it takes quite a while to train these people. Yeah. So even if we, you know, as the superintendent of state police talked to us about, it's going to take, what, 5-6 months to get these guys through the training process and on the road. So I don't think we'll see quite that stream of additional requests, hopefully, until now. And we still have a $30 million emergency fund that we haven't even tapped. So if there are specific, you know, institutions that, well, the biggest one we're worried about, of course, is the Property Crimes Initiative. And we have some members that are working very hard to find intermediate solutions to that. That's the one that I'm real worried about, but we're not even talking about here, that $250, $400 million hole in our budget next session that comes out of education, comes out of human services.
You know? I just to follow, I had 87 employees at the Two River Prison in Umatilla did not receive any vacation this year, and I don't know whether that's with the collective bargaining or what's going on there, but to me, if we have state employees that are supposed to be doing some of these things, they ought to be entitled to some benefits, and so, you know, just trying to bring that to the
committee. We can talk about it at one of the boards. We've done that before.
Okay. Thank you.
Senator Boardman.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. Is there a date set for the look at bonding requests?
Senator Wardley, right after this meeting, Senator Schrader and I are meeting with LFO to work out the calendar for the committee. And so we're hoping to have at least a tentative calendar for you tomorrow at the hearing. I would imagine that bonding is likely to be toward the end of session, maybe not next week, but the following week. But I don't have we haven't worked out the details. They're trying to schedule all the items that we've got.
Just as a follow-up, my request is that we make sure that we have enough time to look at or revisit criteria for and prioritization of bonding requests. So we're looking at the big picture, not just one request at a time.
We actually have, I think, we have a tentative draft schedule, just not complete. It's not like we're just dreaming it up this afternoon. And there was time to at least broach the conversation about long-term capital construction for some stuff. And if we need to broaden that, I think we might be very willing to do that. So get together with us and talk about your ideas.
Senator Carter?
Thank you. Co-chairs, thank you very much for your work. Obviously, it was in-depth, very thoughtful, and collaborative at the same time. So thank you. Here's my concern, that if we look at the fiscal environment, look at your priorities as well, human services always take the brunt of all the cuts. It is my hope that within the wisdom of two of you, that we would, you would not just hold human services to the dollars that is within the human services budget. Because as you know, when we have any kind of economic downturn, the thing that happens, caseloads go up. Whether they are with child welfare, or whether it's seniors and people with disabilities and the numbers of people, the caseload that is there involved, or whether we look at our children in foster care. I don't think this state can continue to have the kind of deans that it has had from the federal government and from Oregon citizens, with all of the negative press that we've been getting about Oregon's most vulnerable citizens. Somewhere along the line, I think it's going to be necessary for you to say, we just, within the framework of what we have, we're going to have to cut. And we don't have enough money to look at some of the things in terms of Oregon's most vulnerable citizens. $2 billion having been cut out of the system as a result of us taking dollars out between 2003 and now. But even back to when we took money out before each of you with co-chairs, took $1 billion out of the system under ballot measure 5, we've continued to erode the kind of services that we provide people in this state. And somewhere along the line, I hope the conversation will be as transparent and as public as it can be, so that the general public will know you don't have just a group of mean, nasty legislators who want to cut services from the most vulnerable of Oregon citizens, but that the money just is not here. And then it is my hope that enough of us as legislators will look at any kind of revenue package that we can come up with to see how we can protect Oregon's most vulnerable citizens. Thank you.
Thank you.
Can I comment on that, Madam Co-Chair?
Mr. Co-Chair.
Just real quick, I really appreciate you bringing that up, Margaret. I think that's critical, and I'm a huge proponent of the governor restructuring that we've talked about. Most of the members, I think, sitting here in Senate side are strong supporters, and it's a function now of trying to get the world to do that, because it is a... When you're 45th in the nation in revenues, you're going to be 45th in the nation in a lot of services, and that's been a problem for us. But having said that, while I hold out some hope that we'll have the courage to move forward in a bigger and bolder way, I think it's important that you note that the reason the co-chairs are not spending a lot of money here is because we know just what you said, that there are likely to be more vulnerable citizens coming onto the rolls by June. So we do not want to tap into our stability fund, into our rainy day fund, or into our ending balance at this stage of the game. We have those, thank God, as a result of the great work we did last session. So if those caseloads go up significantly, we are not going to have to rely just on the rebalance. We will actually have money set aside for them. And that's why if the forecast is stagnant, or flat at least, we're adding, about $13, $14 million out of that rebalance to do stuff we didn't even do in 2007 that hopefully will help the most vulnerable members of our community. So I'm pretty confident we've tried to be as careful in the small book as I think we all agree.
Representative Nathanson and then Senator Winters.
Thank you. I have a couple of comments I'd like to make, but possibly the co-chairs would want to provide additional information, because there's some questions woven into here. In understanding what situations are influencing the choices that we have before us and your recommendations. There's a strong emphasis on looking at an economic forecast that is not happy. You can't put a real happy face on this. But I'd like to explore for a minute the other kinds of factors that could be influencing our state of the budget. For example, sometimes we've gotten good news that there are decreasing demands. I don't think that's going to happen. Sometimes we get good news, such as what we heard a report from DHS during the previous session, that through some really smart auditing and other techniques that they had set up, that they were gaining not only efficiencies, but it was improving the budget through certain kinds of auditing that they were doing. That was good news. On the other hand, we're looking at some indicators that there are increasing demands already and increasing costs. For example, the cost of fuel. Maybe there was some anticipation when the current budget was being prepared a year and a half or two ago, since these things have to start being prepared 3 years out, which I think is one of the problems that we have in this state. We budget way too far in advance because that's what we have to do. That's the current requirement, but it makes it very difficult. So we have huge increases in fuel costs. It was mentioned a few minutes earlier that there is a tax credit program that's become very popular. That's putting an increased demand on us. However, some tax credits, if you look at a sort of a dismal economic forecast, rather than encouraging new jobs, maybe the best it's doing is stopping the loss and preventing a loss of jobs, which is also a very important thing to ensure. But I'm also thinking about the counties that are in crisis right now. There are a handful of counties that are currently in dire straits, maybe even at the point of closing down services and shutting doors. It's starting to happen. I don't know to what extent that this may or may not happen during this millennium, but that's another factor that I'm extremely concerned about. So are there any other factors that we should be watching out for that should influence our choices, things that you've become aware of, increasing demands or costs?
Actually, we will, in the course of our hearings, we're actually going to be discussing some of those. You've referenced the counties, for instance, in their particular flight. I think the times is a huge one. That's going to, we've got to be thinking now about it. I mean, most legislatures only exist in their mind's eye for that biennium, you know, to look good or pass the stuff they think is critical. But I think it's important for us at the state of Oregon. We can't pretend this is a 19th century or 20th century legislature. We have to be thinking a little more forward. So anticipate the initiatives that we think or hear from our friends and colleagues that are coming down the pike that are going to cost us some very, very serious money. Healthcare reform, that's something that's looming on the horizon. While hopefully we're going to have a better system at the end of the day, ultimately will cost us some money up front. Some of the recent court decisions, you know, their impact on some of our risk factors may or may not be what we're hearing, but that's something that our Ways and Means, our LFO folks are going to be dealing with. If the hospitals are having problems, that local government's going to have problems. I worry about that. I come from a local government background. Mm-hmm. So these are the types of things that we're hearing that we're factoring into our thought process and the relative minor additions that we're making, because we want to make sure, as Senator Carter pointed out, we have money for some of the exigencies that will occur.
Senator Winters? Thank you. I would just like to piggyback Senator Carter, and there's one issue that we have not discussed, that either forecast, whether it is the $25 million to $125 million, or whether it's, you know, it's everything static, we constantly are put in a position, and part of it is to our own doing, particularly human services, where our pressure is coming from Department of Justice or outside influence. You know, recently we just had the report that came in, the Senate President has convened an oversight group, and there is no doubt but when we completely go through that, you're talking about an increase in revenue sources. And yet I, you know, in this scenario, I don't see some, you know, the structure there to deal with these unforeseen these impacts or resources that we will need, because once DOJ decides that we will be in compliance, that it will mean additional resources, whether it's increased staffing, we dealt with the issue of the building, the bricks and mortar, but we still have the people side of it.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know what the co-chairs are thinking, that we will address that when we come back, but I do think that we have to give some thought and some serious consideration to what we're going to do respecting the state hospital and the Department of Justice report. For those of you, if you weren't there with that briefing by the Attorney General's office, it's serious, and I don't want to underplay it at all. And I don't want to underplay the fact that, you know, sometimes the Department of Justice decide to come in and take over. And I don't think as a state we want, you know, the feds coming in and taking over, you know, our entities, our state hospitals. And I would just ask the co-chairs to really think about what it means and what it will mean to the budget when we get into the needs of staff at the state hospital. And I would also ask that you really do, you know, we've talked about it, and Senator Carter talked about it. It is a fact that if the economy goes down and we're in a recession, the service needs in human services go up. Whether we're talking about foster care, whether we're talking about group homes, assisted living facilities, all of those components within that agency, they go up. And it's just been within the last 6 months that we've been able to say we're giving them some breathing space, because quite honestly, Senator Carter is correct, since Measure 5, we have systematically cut that agency. So I just think that we've got to plan ahead, and I know it is revenue driven, but at the same time, I don't want us to be in the last on the totem pole in all 50 states either.
Thank you, Senator.
Representative Morgan.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. Just a couple of questions on the special purpose appropriation for salaries, holding that back until after the June forecast. There was recently quite a bunch of salary increases negotiated by the governor for both the management level employees and the line employees, and those have already gone into effect. And so what the special purpose appropriation is for, to cover, I don't think it covers all of the costs, but it covers a portion of the costs, a substantial portion of the costs of the increases that have already been given to the state employees. So what's going to be the impact on state budgets if they're already spending for higher payroll amounts that they're budgeted for and the money's withheld? Where does that, how does that impact budgets in terms of money coming out of other line items to cover salaries and not provided services?
We're actually going to have a report. One of the things the Senate leadership and House leadership has asked is for a report to be made to the Ways and Means Committee during this next 3 weeks on the whole management package and what the effects are and how they're going to accomplish that without hurting programs. Because we have other this is referencing a bad economy where we're going to ask the agencies probably to look at their S&S and stuff. So we want to make sure that the current actions by the executive branch have no impact in and of
itself. On the outcomes, if the funding is the same, but the idea of withholding all or part, depending on the scenario of that appropriation, is that it allows the emergency board to deal with a minor continued decline that would not require then calling the full legislature into emergency session. Because as you know, Representative, the emergency board can appropriate funds that have been appropriated to it, but the emergency board does not have the authority to disappropriate funds that have already been appropriated. So if, as we think, the economy may be softening or going into some decline, by withholding some or all of that, we essentially are, first of all, telling the agencies to be on alert. We are not talking about unwinding any of the executive orders or negotiated contracts that have been implemented, but we would be telling the agencies they face the potential for having to operate with lower appropriations.
If I may follow up. Thank you. I appreciate very much your comments, but I know that when we dealt with the downturn in 2001-03, one of the things that ended up happening was that it became, we essentially clouded the budget picture by withholding some funds and forcing agencies to go into funds that were dedicated to providing services to people that needed the services that the agencies provided. And it has the impact, I think, of really taking transparency out of the budget process, because you've got agencies moving dollars around in line items so they can satisfy their commitments to their staffs. Those dollars come out of places and agencies that often result in diminished levels of services to the people that ordinarily would be receiving those services. So just I think that Senator Schrader's statement is very good, that as a committee, we need to be very aware of what's not happening by virtue of these monies having to be transferred into payroll accounts, and make sure that the impacts that this has are well understood by the committee, because it often has a significant impact in service delivery.
Good point. Thank you. Anyone else on the committee before I open it up for the member in the audience? So, Representative Jensen.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and my apologies for being late here, and my congratulations to the co-chairs for putting together a little flow sheet for us here to kind of follow through so we can get some ideas and have a little bit of understanding of this. I merely want to echo in on Senator Winter's comments regarding the state hospital and the mental health program. I know all of you have read at least excerpts, if not the entire report that we got from the U.S. Department of Justice in relationship to that program. And but to reemphasize what my good friend was pointing out, it scares me when we're talking about the money that's going to be necessary or may become necessary from the Department of Justice and their demands that, you know, on us. It's not that it scares me that we should be treating the people in this way, but in that we really haven't touched the tip of that iceberg in terms of the money. So I think anything that we do, should. I'm sorry, it's kind of like a black cloud hanging over our head. And I happen to come from a county where they had a disagreement with the Department of Justice on the prison that they had in their in the county, and this I guess who won? But just that we be very cautious about this, that we're aware of this, and that it isn't going to come as a surprise, if it does come down the line for us. Thank you, Madam Co-Chair, and again, my apologies.
You bet. Thank you, Representative. Anyone else on the committee? Representative Cowan? No. Members of the press?
Senator Schrader, can you re-explain briefly the potential changes in tax law that would be necessary
Oh, I'm real good at that. Senator Schrader, please expound on changes in tax law. I would be way out of my league doing that. But there are two that concern us that we've had conversations with the Revenue Chair. One is that the Business Energy Tax Credit is a great program, and it's been extremely well received by Oregonians. There is no cap on that program. And as a result, it threatens to overwhelm our budget in one biennium. Maybe we need to have some thoughtful discussion in the Revenue Committee, not here, about how we might deal with that and spread the interest out over many biennia. The other issue, of course, is the so-called stimulus package. Apparently everyone's a Keynesian economic food there in Washington, D.C. I don't happen to believe any of that. But anyway, giving me $500 is going to save Oregon's economy. But the problem is that has a huge effect on our our state budget, because usually that means changing the depreciation schedules. And if they do that, then we have to disconnect or suffer the hit of $50-80 million, whatever that quote stimulus package unquote does to us. Could you identify yourself officially for the record? I guess I need to have.
Oh, Peter Wong, State Senator.
Thank you, Peter. Good.
I didn't mean to.
Yeah, I'm uncomfortable. This is
give him an oral test here, right? Yeah.
But you need.
What do you think?
This is a good conversation with Representative Barnhart and Senator Burton.
Anybody else? And if you, we have been reminded to ask people who would like to ask a question, since it is being broadcast around the building, if you could come to the mic.
Yeah.
That'll intimidate everybody.
Oh, come on.
Come on. It's all crystal clear. Any other questions? We'll be around if you want to talk one-on-one. Thank you.
Thank you.
We will see committee members tomorrow at 3:30.
Ooh. Opening salvo.